Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome to another installment of The French Connection. Today's date is the 29th day of December 2008. Of course, my name is Daryl Bradford Smith. Great to have you here with me for this most important of broadcasts. Year-end broadcasts here. We are setting up a few deep discussions with important people from my past. Somebody who's always been very learned in the subject matter that we've been covering here on the French Connection for some time. But of course, it deserves a good intro here because we're going to be talking about the ideas that Islamic banking has to offer. Also, we're going to be discussing some of his older work. One of them that you will recognize is called The Satanic Voices, Ancient and Modern. And, of course, he took over in the editing position after the loss. The world lost a man named Swain, who had written a very important, in fact, a seminal work on banking and how economies work. And the fact is, the name of the book was called The Crash of 2008. Now, interesting that we are in 2008 and that we are crashing just as the author had envisioned, and how David M. Pidcock, or Dowd Pidcock, had written about. He's edited and revised this book. We're going to bring him up to talk about that, and also other important subjects regarding activity geopolitically in the world, the Israeli incursion into Gaza, and the peace process, which is anything but a peace process. But I'm going to bring him up right now. David, are you with me?
I am, yes. Good evening, Darrell.
Wonderful to have you back, David. You know,
thank you very much.
You've been a guest on this show several times. I'm not even sure how many anymore. But you've always brought a great deal of of research and study to the subjects that we talk about. And I want to start out here with the geopolitical question here. What's been going on in Gaza? Why? My heart goes out to the suffering people of Gaza, even in advance of this heinous criminal invasion that we're watching. They've been starving this population. They've been destroying them morally, emotionally, physically. It's a travesty what I've been watching over the last few years. There's absolutely no interest on the Israeli side of any peace. And in fact, the Israelis are starting to show themselves as monsters, in my view. They are just vile monsters. I see them no different than some people have described the Nazis. Heartless automatons who go ahead and kill people wantonly and starve them and keep medicine from them and keep education from them and keep opportunity from them and travel from them and freedom from them. It is a travesty in that should go down in the annals of human history at the hands of these criminals in a country they have no right over, David. They have no right to be there, these people, these Jews. They are Ashkenazis for the most part. They were not native to that land, either in the recent past or in the ancient past. And I wonder what your take is on these current events that we're watching in unfold in this area.
Well, this is, we should have expected this, but as many people have told me, the Zionists never made any real mystery out of the fact what they would do once they were in control. And this, but let's remember that the children of Israel did have a right to the Holy Land.
But not the people from Khazaria didn't.
Well, no, but I think the people who follow the religion of Abraham, regardless of their origins, I mean, you have the Nazis and the Ashkenazis, as somebody said the other day, which I think is a very good apt description.
Yeah.
But the people, the children of Israel, the upholding of the covenant with Abraham. Now that goes for the Arabs as well. Now let's be perfectly clear: when the Israelites were legitimately living in Palestine or in the Holy Land, they were then abiding by the covenant that they had agreed before entering into the Holy Land. And of course, while ever they were following the Torah, then the Holy Land, and I'm reading, there are several books, and I've met many of the Neturei Karta rabbis who know that there shouldn't be an Israel until the Messiah comes. And this movement, the Zionist movement, was a political move, but it was also partly related to the geopolitical and the issues of the empire. that we wanted a garrison town in the Middle East, and this was mainly for the Anglo-American oil company. So many of the people who were there and are there currently there are there without the right of the agreement, the covenant, and it's purely a political belonging. So it is a garrison town, and when we see that the statements, and this is a statement from one of the great rabbis, saying that, and because of our sins we were exiled from our land and removed from our soil, and we cannot now go up there and appear and prostrate ourselves before it. This is part of the prayers. The temple was lost physically because of the Jewish people's failure to live up to their spiritual obligations to God. And also, this is incumbent also on the Palestinian, that they have a covenant which is the same covenant as their cousins had. And once you, and I spoke to Yasser Arafat in the Sudan, I met him several occasions, George Habash, I met all these guys, the armchair sort of revolutionaries. And when you have a socialist belonging or a communist, atheist type belonging in the Holy Land, it will not permit you to remain, whether you're Arabs or Israelis. So this is the beginning, and I know that you're not particularly religiously inclined or to these, but basically, to talk to religious Jews and Muslims, they realize that they are the cause of their own punishment. The Israelis are there being punished by the Palestinians and vice versa. So it's a Mexican standoff, and they have to return to the covenant, which means that both of them can live side by side in peace.
Well, it's in my view, it's not a Mexican standoff, because one's using tanks, the other guys are using rocks. And the fact of the matter is that they have no right to that land, regardless of what Abraham or anybody else said. If I put a sea cat on me, I can't go take the Punjab. If I put if I wear a Hindu garb, I can't go claim India. The fact of the matter is, this is a nonsense in my view. These people came from another part of the world. They had no ethnic roots to it. They're converts in 760. They come down there with Talmudic beliefs that call the rest of us non-humans, and they commence destroying and killing human beings.
There is Judaism, or there is classical Hebrew Judaism, and there are two forms, and one is that upholds the Ten Commandments. The other group, of which people like Golda Meir and Ben Gurion and that group, they basically believe in the reverse of the Ten Commandments: "Thou shalt kill, thou shalt commit adultery." And it really is one of the most important books for people to read is Jewish History, Jewish Religion, The Way to 3,000 Years by Israel Shahak. It's a brilliant book.
It's on the front page of my website.
This is one of this is one of the most important books, because as he is a survivor, of the Holocaust, but of course, looking at the Holocaust as well, you find that there's this contradiction. You have the head of the Luftwaffe, Erhard Nold, who is half Jewish, he's a Mischling, and the head of the Blitzkrieg, and 160 odd senior officers and men in Hitler's army. Now, this is one of the astonishing things that people, when they find out, they say, well, how is it possible? But this is the contradiction. That is, and Palestine and the Holy Land are basically torn apart by this group, who have insisted on being there against the orders of their own scripture. But of course, they don't follow that scripture.
But David, let me interject here. It seems to me that the entire Holocaust event, if you'll call it even an event in that light, was orchestrated by Zionists to force the populations of this region of the world, the Polish ghettos and the rest, to go to Palestine. And the ones that refused to go, the ones that said, look, we don't subscribe to your Zionist edicts, they were forced into these camps. The ones that weren't became dirt farmers in the Middle East.
Well, this is precisely right, but they didn't want people who were wanting to uphold the covenant. That would have meant every 7 years the land would have to lay fallow, and Rothschild particularly didn't want that. They wanted their own agenda. And of course, the ones who went in, the ones who went into the gas chambers were the ones who were Torah conscious. They didn't want anybody with a religious belonging wanting to go to the Holy Land, because remember, under the Mosaic law, the debt and the land would have to revert to the Palestinians after 50 years because they'd lost the land. And so they didn't want the anything to do with the Mosaic law, which is exactly is Islamic law, and there's no difference at all between the law for Israel and the law for Ishmael. It's exactly the same.
Well, but yet at the same time, you know, we take a look at groups like the Torah Carta, who call themselves Torah Jews, who still adhere to some of the doctrines within the Talmud, and in fact utilize the Talmudic teachings as a reference point for their belief system. And in fact, if you take a look at any writings in the Talmud or any Zohorite or Kabbalah writings, you can find some very vile sicknesses in this group.
Oh, indeed. Look, but the point being that there are good and bad in all communities. Unfortunately, the ones who have gained the upper hand in Palestine, and if you read Herzl's, anything to do with Herzl, or even Chaim Weizmann's 1919 speech in London, he said we should not enter Palestine as a Junkers and behave in a way which they're exactly doing. But of course, I'm afraid that this spells the end of Israel, what they're doing now. I mean, if you read Habakkuk, and we know the prophecies from the Islamic side as well. Unfortunately, most of the people probably listening haven't read the Quran or read any of the Hadith, but I've spent nearly 30-odd years now looking at things, and there will be a reckoning, and there will be removed root and branch. This will happen, and certainly within the next few years, it's coming.
Well, one can only hope for such an outcome, and you know, the fact is that I've spent my entire life, and I'm in my 50s now, my entire life has been poisoned on my television screen by these vile creatures, and you know, this is my reality, David. I wake up to it every day, and I have to go live in a world with these monsters in it, and the simple fact of the matter is that human beings need to start coming together against this kind of sickness. They are a sick bunch of psychopaths, in my view.
Indeed, I couldn't agree more. And it requires light to be shed upon it. And this, of course, has been the great tragedy that the planning has been meticulous, and they've been planning for 3,000 years. This is not happening overnight. But remember, Ben-Gurion spelled it out in 1962, what was going to happen. And everything that's happened in the world, as he predicted, has come true to the letter, to the day. So work to a plan and plan the work. But if the rest of the world isn't planning or recognizing a plan, and they're being, of course, they will be accused of being conspiracy theorists and the usual claptrap that you hear. But it's come to pass, and Ben-Gurion has been proven to be accurate, and the plan is working up to the point where 2003, Shimon Peres called for Jerusalem to be made the world capital. This is the other side of the agenda, why there will be no settlement there, because they wish world government to be run from Jerusalem. This is the agenda that's going down at this minute.
Well, what we know also, now let's move to the kind of a segue here into the American nightmare that's growing, this economic disaster that's been orchestrated in the United States and in Britain and in the rest of the world. But let's move for a second here to the Obama area, to Chicago, to the Pritzker family, to the Crown family, to the families that promoted Golda Meir when she was in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And of course, everyone thinks that she was a Middle Eastern Jewess. She was not. In fact, she was given her marching orders from the United States Jewish community, and then sent to learn her Zionism firsthand, and became a very virulent leader for Zionism. Did she not?
Indeed, she did. Yes, a bit like Mrs. Thatcher, you know, strong but wrong, as usual.
Yes. Now, what we've got is the same suspects or same families who were very much involved in the promotion of Golda Meir are the same people behind the promotion of Obama. And you can find that through the connections to this Rahm Emanuel and his father's participation in the Irgun. You can see it to, as I said, the Pritzker family and the Crown family and whatnot. Now, they have very close ties to New York Jewry, as well as the Rothschild fortune, Oppenheimer, and the rest. What do you see happening with this next administration and how it relates to our financial malaise worldwide and the things that are developing as we speak?
Well, as we know from the historical record now, and for from people, say, like Milton Friedman. Let's say he said, and this is a well-known quote, but not well-known, but it's a famous quote, that the Federal Reserve definitely caused the Great Depression by contracting the amount of currency in circulation by one-third from 1929 to 1933. By the time the Federal Reserve came into existence, and the Bank of England, of course, was the precursor to that, then you had the means by which you could control the entire world economy, and the agenda was set then and of course we had World War One, we had then the Second World War, which was to bring about the conditions which they would be able to dominate the world, and as we've seen, from Dennis Healy, he said such world events do not occur by accident; they are made to happen.
That's right.
Whether it is due to national issues or commerce, and most of them are staged and managed by those who hold the purse strings. Now, he was Secretary of the Defence, British Chancellor of the Exchequer, not a loony lefty. So it's the mechanism is historical. And it's also biblical, because the control, the power is, of course, is the objective, and money is the means by which you can secure power. And therefore, the events that we've seen, the same time, well, you talk about America. Most people listening to the program will not be aware that Leon Trotsky was living in New York with Jacob Schiff several months before the revolution, and then the first Bolshevik government was sailed from New York.
That's right.
And this is stuff that is not in the history books. But the agenda is world government from Jerusalem, and from the Islamic standpoint, I have the benefit of having Jews, Muslims, and Christians in my own family. We have a long weekend, of course, but you can see that the differences between us are none at all. That you can live with the differences. It's purely the politics. But the agenda, as you were going back to the families, these are the same families throughout history. Will cause the problem.
Well, you're spot on with that. But what I'm saying, David.
Sorry, Daryl.
Yeah, I've seen the contraction of credit to the rank and file human in the United States and in Britain. We're seeing a shut off of access to loans for small business. We're seeing a reduction in the ability of companies to have access to capital so that they can weather this shrinking of the economy. But at the same time, we are hyperinflating parts of the economy. So what we're going to see in the first instance is a deflationary spiral.
Yes.
You okay, David?
Yes, I'm okay.
Would you like to get some water?
I've just got some brought to me. Thank you.
Okay. My point is this, is that, as you mentioned in the first major depression, the first few years were met with a terrible deflationary spiral. People's value of their things they had purchased went to nothing. You couldn't sell any of your valuables for very much. But then there's a period coming by virtue of this incredible printing they've done of the money. We've got 26% augmentation in the amount of dollars in circulation in the hands of banking powers has happened in the last year, according to the M3 figures from Shadow Statistics. However, so what we're going to see here is a deflationary period to start with, and then an inflationary period that will eat up everybody's salaries. In other words, you won't get a pay raise, but everything will cost more, Dave.
And that's right. Exactly. It's the rerun of 29, and this was predicted by Gary Allen in one of his books, I think, The Rockefeller File. And it's the same scam that they will run. The idea is to dispossess people and then to emerge as rulers of us all. But Lincoln basically pointed this out in 1864, and he said, "The money power preys on nations in times of peace, conspires against them in times of adversity. It is more despotic than monarchy, more insolent than autocracy, and more selfish than bureaucracy." So he understood, and he predicted the events that we're now describing in a year later, or a year earlier. He said, "I see in the future a crisis approaching that unnerves me and causes me to tremble for the safety of my country. Corporations have been enthroned, an era of corruption will follow. and the money power of the country will endeavor to prolong its reign by working upon the prejudices of the people until wealth is aggregated in a few hands and the republic destroyed. This is the agenda, and as I say, I go back to the policy of those people, including Golda Meir. World government is coming down in Jerusalem, and Ben-Gurion predicted it very clearly in 1962.
Now, they did not have... Now, here, I know a lot about historic events and how history can be upstaged by technology, okay?
Yeah.
The only way a monopoly can be dislodged is either through through legal means of a government, by dismantling it, or by something technological that comes along that they didn't expect.
And yeah, the wild card, sort of.
The wild card. Well, the wild card in this instance is the Internet. And,
indeed.
And it has stepped in, and as of yet, they have not found a way to control the truth or silence the truth, and it has done terrible damage to them. And I pride myself in the fact that I've been instrumental in damaging these criminals' interest. Now, it's happening worldwide because these people have a sense of self-value that is beyond rational, and this hubris that they carry doesn't allow them to make rational decisions. And I'll give you an example. As they have been losing credibility worldwide by their actions in Palestine, they decide to go to war with Lebanon and lose the world. We've got 25% growth in our numbers and in our following. Now, as the financial mess happens and Zionist Jews are being blamed in many quarters, they're losing more credibility. And what do? They attack Gaza. And now we're going to hit them with another 25%. In other words, these people don't even see the damage they're doing to themselves. I couldn't be happier about how stupid they are when it comes to decision-making. They're cutting their own throats over there by doing these things. The world is turning against them, David.
Well, this is what they've done historically, isn't it? I mean, the warning for them is that if you read the Bible, we will disperse you and send you to a nation to become an excoriation and a hissing and a booing. And this happened because the key to all the problem is interest. I'm afraid I have to come back to usury. And the original collapse of the first market collapse with Riz Korah, the cousin of Moses, when the fire raged down on them, the earthquake opened, and they all went down into the crevice of the earth. And but they haven't learned anything from history. This is human nature, but particularly them, who have. But remember, the use of usury or interest is part of an economy. Those that live by the fraud eventually die by the fraud, and this is what has happened. But now the lender of last resort, the people in America, Britain, particularly in the UK, we are paying the price for their gambling habit, and it's time that the real criminals or the people causing the problem should be blamed without fear of actually being called an anti-Semite, because this is their game. This is the game they've played historically, and they will be hoist with their own petard in this occasion, I believe.
Well, as you well know, Semitic roots are determined by language, and the simple fact of the matter is that most of these Ashkenazis haven't got a Semitic bone in their bodies. And so anti-Semitism is a non-starter in my view. But let's go back to the idea now that something has to come in to replace the crime syndicate and the system that they've got. And you've been working on ideas in this regard for some time. You know, we've touched on the kind of the moral immoral base that they work from. Let's talk about solutions a little bit,
right,
of what you've come across in your studies.
Okay, well, look, the advice that I've been giving, I mean, let us go back to one particular event where we know we can make a difference, and that was Malaysia. Now, when the Asian crisis, money crisis, started in the late 1990s, I was approached by the Malaysian, I was working in Kuala Lumpur at the time, on the Twin Towers. And I was asked then by somebody if we could find a solution to the problem of the meltdown that was coming. So I put together a group. James Gibbs Stewart was one of the members, Ken Parmiton and others, and Mohammed Rafiq. And they put together a plan of survival for Mahathir, the Malaysian government, and it worked, and we implemented that. So We have a track record of actually succeeding. It's like David will always defeat Goliath, providing he polishes his stone and he knows where to strike.
Well, I want to bring out something that was important to state here, David. What you didn't do was thumb your nose at this criminal cabal. What you instead did was say, look, we're not throwing you out of our economy, but basically we're going to pass on taking the offered credit through your World Bank and your IMF, and we'll leave the option open, but we're going to, for the time being, go on our own way and do it our own way.
Indeed. Well, this is precisely correct, because I've been brought up with the name of David. You always believe that you can defeat Goliath, and this is like the high tech being defeated by a very simple stone, but dropped at the right occasion. But so you can defeat Goliath, providing you know what you're doing and you have the courage to actually give it a try. This evidence, and then it was actually to give the points in the plan and actually to set out how they could do it, and they did. They followed the directions, and James Gibbs Stewart actually gave the 5 points, and these were implemented. It was never acknowledged by Mahathir or the government, but basically we were comfortable knowing that we can defeat the enemy and the IMF and everybody else if we have the opportunity.
Well, you know, Dominique Strauss-Kahn running things over at the IMF right now, and of course, you know, he came from the French Jewish ruling
yes.
elite, and of course, the man was actually arrested and convicted of fraud against students' insurance funds while he was in charge of that. He was milking money off of it,
yeah.
And of course, now he's in charge of the world's IMF program. But I know that Tan Mahathir Mohamad didn't want to publicize it because countries that make an issue of defeating these people often end up on the wrong side of a bomb, don't they?
Yes, surely they do. I mean, but remember, this is historical, and Jesus walked on water, fed the 5,000, everybody was cheering. And then, of course, he overturned the money changers in the temple, and that's when he ran into serious trouble. And historically, you can find people all the way through history, as soon as they realize what the cause of the problem is, that the mosquitoes are spreading the malaria and not the bees, then, of course, that's when they usually find themselves, like Lincoln did. I mean, Lincoln's military policy that I've included in the front of this book, The Other Road to Serfdom, is the perfect basis for all governments throughout the world to follow. Lincoln's monetary policy, but it's based on David Ricardo's design for the National Bank of England that he wrote in 1823. Lincoln implemented it and paid the price. Kennedy reintroduces it, pays the price. And, of course, now, as Austin Mitchell said, and many politicians, they always look for passing wagons. They know that the outcome for anybody challenging the system is a bullet, or, you know, or then you're transported back to where you came, like Brian Gould, who wrote the most superb material and called for exactly the solution, but he then had to leave politics after Gordon Brown attended the Bilderberg Conference in 1991, I think, or 1990, with John Smith. And
is this
then,
after he was involved in fooling around with children up in Dunblane and the rest of it?
I don't know much about that, so I can't comment.
Yeah,
all I can comment on is...
I can. Uh-huh.
But the point is that that as soon as Labour agreed to drop Clause 4, they became basically the Tory lookalike, and they got through... basically the back door, what Thatcher couldn't get through the front. So they after, but of course John Smith dies, and then you have the Blair-Brown faction. It was at Baden-Baden where Gordon Brown, it's in my book, Satanic Versus Voices Ancient and Modern, and it was covered in the Evening Standard when we launched that book at the English-speaking Union. The man who ran the London Evening Standard's Londoner's Diary mentioned that Brown and John Smith had attended this super Masonic conference. They denied it. Central Office denied it. Then, when I met up with Charles Taylor, who was running the Evening Standard, he said, no, they finally admitted that he did go. So that was the deal when Labour basically became the second Tory party. It was Crossroad gone, and with it everything else. It was anything to do with social responsibility.
Well, you know, and it's interesting because I think it was you that mentioned to me that Blair was a poofter. Nobody took him seriously. He was almost a laughing stock in the halls of Parliament.
No, I never said that because I don't know that to be the case.
Well, he was a laughing stock in the halls of Parliament.
I've been in the music business and I've been a singer, and we knew about Blair and all the others, you know, that I worked with people like Joe Cocker and others who were really serious people, but I never said that.
I learned that he was not taken very seriously in the halls of Parliament, but all of a sudden he gets the right connections and is elevated quickly into a position to take over. And the fact is that people saw him as sort of a ne'er-do-well, and then all of a sudden he gets elevated. Now, look at Obama here. The guy's never had a significant piece of legislation ever passed. He has very little time in Senate. The man was elevated to his post almost miraculously, and there's very little on his past that can really be determined, including the fact that he's probably not who he says he is, or that he was even born a naturalized American citizen.
Well, I don't think that really matters in terms of is he any good or he's certainly a good orator. He's a good showman. He can work the crowd. But remember that the governments are only in office. They're not in power. They haven't been in power in this country for several hundred years. Everybody's mentioned them. Gladstone particularly was in office. He found himself in office but not in power, and had no power over the city until he set up the post office savings bank, when he had money that he could actually spend the way that the people had elected him to actually carry out things. So the government for 300 years in this country, and I'm talking about England, has been the banks.
Yeah. Well, let's get into the other road to serfdom. How unregulated capital caused the crash of 2008. Now, that is your own meta-texting, since you've taken the work and begun to edit and prepare it for its publication, which is now underway. But the original book was written as The Other Road to Serfdom. Am I correct?
Correct. That's correct. In response to Hayek's famous book, or infamous book, The Road to Serfdom, in which he identifies Marxist socialism as the road to serfdom, conveniently ignoring the fact that unregulated capital is the other road to serfdom, and that Marx, in actual fact, doesn't condemn all capitalism. He condemns rentier capitalism, which is in mortal conflict with producer capitalism. Of course, the Marxists have run with that ball as well. They haven't realized that Marx didn't condemn all capitalism, because the worker, in his terms, is also a capitalist.
Well, but I mean, capitalism in its pure sense, in its textbook presentation, in other words, capital finding its way to good ideas and then allowing innovation to reign and person to profit from it, this in its pure sense is a very good idea, but it's never, ever, in my view, in my historical research, been practiced purely. It's always just been on paper.
Well, as Keynes and Ricardo and Smith, all the way through history up to the time where we started to get what we call classical economics working, Keynes, Ricardo particularly, said that the issuers of paper would always win. It was down that the Treasury, the Parliament, a government body like the National Physical Laboratory that gives you measures and weights, etc., should be the body that actually issues the amount of money that's required to keep everything in balance, not neither...